the biggest take-home message of that trip was how fascinating people are and how much people are willing to help and meet you and talk to you and share with you when you're vulnerable and on the road. Frequently, I would get to a campsite at midnight or at 1 in the morning after riding for 10 hours on the bike, and people would come out of their campers with food, or the guys or the kids would come out and help set my tent, for the night, and they'd want to talk to you, invite you to their campsite, to their fire. It was just amazing. People would just come up to you and talk to you. So that was, I thought that was the biggest part of the whole trip was, the diversity of the people I met and the amazing things I met on the road. Last year, the way I did a 7,000-mile trip was I would leave my bike in different major cities in the airport. I'd go to work for a week. I'd come back, pick up the bike, and continue the trip. So, you make it happen if you want it to happen, right? So if I want to do the trip, all I need to do is just figure out my schedule and leave the bike in I left the bike in Denver. I left the bike in Albuquerque. I left the bike in Salt Lake City, a week at a time. So I just would come back on the weekend. Instead of flying back home, I'd fly back to where the bike was. And then I take off from the next airport, 1,000 miles away or 2,000 miles away. And the cool thing there is just the same thing that I told you before, people help you. So the hotels would keep my clothes and my luggage, and the airport parking would help me park the bike in a safe place. And they keep my helmet in the office. I mean, people just do stuff for you if you ask.
Mm-hmm.
You can use Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance as an iconic book that explains to people who don't ride bikes what it's all about. But in reality, it's yoga. Being on the motorcycle, you have to be attentive to what you're doing in the moment. You can't be thinking about problems. You can't be thinking about schedules. So it's just the wind, the weather, the people you meet, the variability of the terrain and the views just makes it, it's just amazing. There's just nothing, it's just amazing.
You don't have that much anticipation until the door opens.
Right.
So there's two moments in skydiving that are very, very critical on how much fear you can tolerate. And the first one is when they say 5 minutes. So the pilot, screams or yells or lets people know that you're 5 minutes away from the jump, and the plane starts to line up with the landing site. So the elevation starts, it stops. So basically you get to 12,000 feet or 13, whatever you're going to jump out of. And you feel that the plane levels out and the speed goes down because they have to slow down for you to go out. And then what happens next is the next call is 1 minute, and then you really start to feel afraid. And because then you're in it, right? You're ready. Everybody starts to do all their things. People are checking their gear.
Right.
People are putting their goggles on. Everybody's getting ready. So nobody, there's no more conversation. There's no more. It's now okay. We're down to the nitty gritty of it. And then they yell. The next thing they yell is door. When they yell door, that means the door will open, and then you feel that thrust of very, very cold air and wind that comes into the plane,
mm-hmm.
and there's a lot of noise, and it's amazing because you feel a lot of noise the first second, and then it's sort of quiet in your mind because you're so, your thoughts are just racing. It's an amazing moment. If I can tell you the truth, more than doing formations, more than landing, more than anything in skydiving, the most exciting part of it is the decision to take the leap. Is that you make that last choice when you still have a foot on the plane and you put your body out, or you throw yourself out, or you jump, or you step out of the plane into the ledge of the plane outside the plane. That critical moment still gives me sort of butterflies. And it still makes you feel like I am now putting my life in the hands of the gear and in the hands of the training and in the hands of the people who put my gear together. I'm trusting that everybody has done what they need to do right for me to land safely. When people dance, they make it look very easy, and it's definitely not easy.
Mm-hmm.
There's a connection that goes into it, knowing how to read the other person,
mm-hmm.
knowing how to communicate with the other person what you want, what your intentions are. I mean, tango in reality has two principal core elements. One is showing your intention and
mm-hmm.
allowing the person to give you permission to move forward. Ever since I was a child, and because of the background of going to so many schools and traveling so much with my mother, she was a ballet dancer, she was an artist, she's a painter, she was my dad was a musician and a poet. So it was always about momentum and movement. I think movement is the key. So for me, if I'm not going anywhere, like I don't like destinations. I like the journey of getting to the destination. As
mm-hmm.
soon as I get there, I want to go somewhere else.